Welcome to the Savvy Scribe podcast. I am so glad you're here. Before we start the show, if you're interested, we have a free Facebook group called Savvy Nurse Writer Community. I appreciate you following and listening to me today, and I would love if you would subscribe via iTunes. And if you love our show, can I ask you for a review? Select ratings and reviews and write a review. It's that simple. I would love to read your review, and it helps other nurses like you find our podcast. Thanks so much. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Savvy Scribe Podcast. I'm Janine Kalbeck, your host, and today we're going to be talking with Tim. He owns the website freelancegps.com, and we're going to talk today about how he grew his business, freelance business, to $480,000. What? All right, here we go.
Welcome to the Savvy Scribe Podcast.
A podcast for healthcare professionals who are interested in starting their own health writing businesses.
I'm Janine, a registered nurse and your host. I'm a labor and delivery nurse, mom to these two incredible boys, wife to my best friend, and owner of two crazy Great Danes. I help nurses discover freelance writing as an extra income opportunity with help from my guests. Join us over on Facebook in the group Savvy Nurse Writer Community or SavvyNurseWriter.com to join our course and membership to create your own profitable writing business.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Sorry for to be a little bit late. We were just stuck on another call, but I have a bunch of people in our waiting room, but I wanted to talk to you first and just say hello and thank you for coming up.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. So we're going to be talking today about how you grew your business to $480,000?
Yeah.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. So Tim, thank you again for being here. Tell us a little bit where you're from and, you know, how you got started in freelancing and like what you do now, like the kind of the journey a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. So I am a freelance web developer, designer, and copy writer. So I wear a couple of different hats. And ironically, my freelance journey started with a job search. So I have worked at tech startups pretty much my whole career. And in 2019, I had been leading product design at a startup and had been working on a new product that I was really excited about. We were just starting to get some traction. So I was kind of thrilled. And on the Monday after my bachelor party, I came in, and
feeling wonderful.
Yeah. Feeling great. the CEO, sat me down and basically told me that he had decided to, change directions back to the old product, that was struggling. Yeah, I was out.
Oh, that's great for your spouse.
Yeah.
Welcome to marriage.
Yeah. So it was definitely a bit of a shock because we had, you know, I poured, I don't know, a year and a half of kind of blood, sweat, and tears into the product. I was really psyched about it. And we were starting to see some really great progress. But the CEO was not feeling nearly as excited, and I think just kind of decided he missed his old vision and wanted to go back to that. So, you know, I found myself in the midst of this job search that I honestly was not super excited to be in. Was going on tons of interviews, was you know, got a couple of offers, but nothing I was excited about. And I had done a little bit of freelancing on the side, but it was always like the kind of thing where, you know, a friend of a friend introduced me or a client came to me, nothing regular. I never kind of considered it a full-time thing. And, you know, in addition to saving for the wedding, I was also saving for a house at the time. And so I kind of knew if I was going to make it work, I'd have to figure something out pretty quickly. And, you know, chatted about it with, you know, my now wife. And she was like, you know what, like, just go for it. Like you'll figure it out. And, you know, that first year was definitely a rough one, in many respects, but, fast forward to today and I've got a, you know, a healthy and growing business. So, yeah, that's how things started.
Wow. How long ago was that?
That was 2019.
So not that long ago. I mean, that's literally not that long ago. Wow.
Yeah.
And where are you based at?
I'm based in Boston.
In Boston. Okay, cool. Cool. And what type of companies do you work with now?
Yeah, so it's mainly e-commerce companies and tech startups. And a lot of the work I do is around conversion rate optimization. So there's a lot of like work on like the copy side around making sure my clients are communicating what they're selling well and in a way that's, you know, enticing to customers. And then I, you know, I implement on a design and code standpoint as well.
Okay. So I guess one of our first questions, I mean, the whole premise of this episode is like this big income thing. We know that you had to push to like make it work, right? You had to make it work. What made it work? What was the thing you did to say it's going to work this way? This is the magic formula.
Yeah. So, I mean, I tried, just about everything that first year. You know, I tried freelancing sites like Upwork. I tried social media. I tried a little bit of blogging, like a lot of the things that you hear from folks. And what I discovered along the way was that not all marketing channels are created equal. And I think it's helpful to evaluate any marketing channel on kind of two spectrums. First, like how crowded is that channel? You know, everybody can join Upwork, which means everybody does. So there's, you know, there's tons of people competing for your clients' time and attention, which means, you know, the average project gets like 50 plus proposals and many of them are for like, you know, $5 an hour. So I discovered pretty quickly that that was not a recipe for building a successful business. But the same is, I think, true for social media and blogging and many of the other kind of channels out there, right? Like when you're using those channels, you're competing with effectively every other marketer out there on the internet, you know, not just other freelancers for your clients' attention. And then I think the other spectrum that's helpful to look at is like, just how much time, money, and effort a channel takes to use both upfront and on an ongoing basis. So like the so-called like expert advice for something like Upwork is you should be submitting 25 to 50 proposals a week if you're actively looking for work. That's certainly not my idea of fun. And I don't know anybody who could do that many with any kind of quality in under like 20 hours a week. And so, you know, it's incredibly inefficient. The same, I think, is true for like blogging and social media, right? Like creating good content and amassing a following takes a lot of time and effort. And so I think what I found myself doing was sort of searching for a channel that really didn't have those pitfalls, right? Didn't take a ton of time, wasn't really crowded, was sort of natural to use and played to my strengths a little bit. And what I eventually discovered was that one-on-one conversations work far better than anything else. And so for me, what that has looked like is, number one, identifying like the hubs where my ideal clients are hanging out. So, you know, and those can be both online and in the real world. So like industry meetups, co-working spaces, startup accelerators, industry Slack groups, those kinds of things. And then going to those hubs and participating, but also identifying like who already knows my ideal clients and could potentially introduce me. And oftentimes, a great source for that is other freelancers, particularly those in complementary industries, right? So, for copywriters, oftentimes like marketers, designers, web developers, are already working with your clients, right? And tend to be the first people that your clients ask when they're looking for a referral, and they're not competitive with you. So they're going to be willing to introduce you. So building relationships with them can be really, really powerful. So I think that was kind of the first part of the of the secret, if you will, was just figuring out a way to come in through the side door that was more efficient. And I think the second part was really figuring out who the best clients were and how to offer them something that's really pretty unique. I've now because I've run a website called Freelance GPS that also that kind of supports freelancers, and I coach people on how to start and grow successful businesses. And so I've coached, I don't know, almost 150 freelancers one-on-one. I've got 10,000 subscribers. And one of the things that I've found super consistently is that the most successful freelancers work with the best clients. That client quality is like the number one predictor of whether or not a freelancer is going to succeed. And, both financially, but also in terms of like their overall happiness. And so figuring out who the best clients are and how you appeal to them is huge.
Yeah, that's great. And I think, branching off of that a little bit, I liked how you said like graphic designers and whomever. I always think about like where we are as content writers, right? Or copywriters, whatever you are. And looking before you, like what process is before you and then what process is after you in the business development area. So if it's, you know, they need content for their blog, well, first they need a website. So you would go to like a web designer who works for startups, health or tech startups, or in our case, a lot of the healthcare companies, like who's working with them. And then after, like who's promoting, who's doing social media management. Maybe those people are like people to connect with for healthcare's to help with content development. So that's always a good strategy to do too, but connecting with people that are before and after you in that equation and aren't your competitors. Because they're always, you know, people are always wanting to help people. And even though they're freelancers, even though they can be competitors, a lot of times bigger companies need more than one. So one person can't do all the work and they may bring you on as well. So network with one another always, because it's always helpful when you know somebody and can refer them because you like them and you know they do good work. But yeah, and I think it's funny that they say like the 25 to 30 proposals a week, but then they charge you to do the proposals. So it's like, how can anyone, you have to pay to get jobs that you probably won't get. So, I mean, I've been successful on Upwork work personally, but I have never done 25 to 30 pitches a week, but they're very generalized, specialized areas. So it's like, they actually need an OB nurse. Well, yeah, you're not going to get all the OB nurses in the world applied to that job. And there's not going to be 50 applicants, but in regular, you know, general marketing, yeah, you're going to get a ton. You're going to be against a whole bunch of people. And I like the ideas that you said about Slack channels and finding where other marketers are and content managers are and such, because it's hard to find where these people are hanging out because everybody's so virtual. So it's tough. But yeah, I like that. And congratulations on your 10,000 subscribers. That's pretty awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think a couple of years after I got started, I realized how much freelancing had just sort of changed my life terms of like the flexibility and autonomy I have, the lack of stress compared to, to full-time work. And I really just wanted to kind of help other people get the same thing. So it's been kind of a fun side project. I still, my main focus is still, freelancing for those tech startups and e-com companies, but, more and more I'm finding myself kind of drawn into this world of coaching and helping other people do the same thing.
Yeah, because it's an amazing feeling when you have that flexibility and kind of do whatever you want, whenever you want, essentially. Go outside if you want to, go on vacation if you want to. It's just crazy what you can do with life when you actually have the flexibility to do it. And then everyone around you just thinks you don't work. But that's a whole nother story. Yeah. So I do have some questions for you though, Tim, if you're open for it.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them are about like scaling, because I think a lot of our writers kind of have the basics down, right? We got to pitch, we got to get a website, we got to get ourselves out there a little bit.
But it's going from that area of, yeah, I have one or two clients, but I need more. But it's almost hard to juggle like my full-time job and these clients on the side. So I think where I'm going with this, like when you start starting to scale, what tips do you have when you're trying to like think bigger?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of things that I think are probably worth thinking about. The first one is to just remember that your inventory is inherently limited, right? We only have so many hours in the day. And, you know, I know a ton of freelancers who start freelancing on the side. That's certainly like my origin of freelancing, you know, included that as well. And so that means like at some point you are not going to scale by just adding more projects or adding more hours, right? You know, that just does not work. And so that means that, you know, your scale really has to come from, adding more value for your clients and being perceived as adding more value, so that you can increase your rates. And so then the question becomes, how do I do that? Right. And I think ultimately the strategy that I tend to recommend is effectively just trading up clients. Right. And so, you know, your first gig as a freelancer is probably not going to be the highest paying gig, right? That's just not how it works. And you're trying to get your sea legs under you and that kind of thing. But you can kind of just keep increasing your rates incrementally until you start getting pushback. And even then, I'd say if you're not getting any pushback, it's probably not a good sign, right? That's a sign that you're not charging enough, for sure. So I think that is the first thing, is just kind of keep trading up clients. If your close rate's 100%, that's a problem. So keep increasing your rates. But I think the second piece, and the piece that's probably a little bit less intuitive, is about how you position yourself in a way where you can charge substantially more. And for me, for my clients, that was really about getting as close as possible to business problems. And so, you know, my clients are primarily focused on three things, right? Increasing revenue, decreasing costs, and if they're a startup, what's called traction, which is basically hitting whatever metrics they need to hit to raise their next round of funding. And so the closer I can get to those things, the better off I am, because I'm then perceived as an investment rather than an expense. And when you're perceived that way, right, you're perceived as something that they want to maximize rather than a cost they want to minimize. And that changes things substantially. I write, copy and code and do design work. I don't think about that as the product. Fundamentally, that is just the medium, right? The product, the art, if you will, is in helping my clients hit those business goals, right? So helping them increase revenue through copy and positioning myself that way makes an absolutely huge difference, because they're willing to spend more on that than they are just on like, oh, here's an article, or, you know, here's some changes. And I think, you know, in the healthcare setting, and I've worked a little bit in healthcare in the past, right, you're going to have to think a little bit creatively about it and think about the things that your clients ultimately care about, right? And in some cases, it may be revenue. I think in a lot of other cases, it's probably going to be, safety or compliance or, health outcomes, those kinds of things, but figuring out how you can deliver on those goals rather than just deliver, you know, an article or a piece of copy or whatever it is, right? I think is going to make a huge difference in what you can charge.
And I think too, even getting on a discovery call with them and asking them like, well, what's your goal with content? What are you guys trying to do? And then using what they say in the proposal and tweaking your offer to meet that is, I think, how you can extract that from the client so that you can position yourself, like you said, as an investment rather than an expense, because you're not just any old writer that can just give them a blog piece and call it a day. You want to know what they want, what they're going to do with it. And I, you know, as a new writer, I wasn't like that. I never asked that. I was just, I wanted to just write. I just wanted to make the money. I wanted to land the clients. And it wasn't until someone said, well, what's the blogs do? I don't know what the blog, I don't know. I guess traffic. Well, yeah, what does traffic do? Well, it brings you more clients, customers, whatever. So then you kind of have to reverse engineer it. Well, how does my blog, what are they going to do with it? You ask them, what's the goal with it? And, oh, we're going to send it out to our social media channels. We're going to do this. Because if your clients just want you to write, and it doesn't do anything, then they're going to look back over the next few months or the next quarter and go, well, that didn't do anything. Why did we even pay Janine to do it? So you have to think of it like, and ask them, like, what are they going to do with it? Because if they're not going to do something with it, it's a waste of your time, because you're going to land a client and then you're going to lose them. But that also positions yourself to say, well, if you don't know what you're going to do with it, here's what we can do with it. And you can then provide those services as well if you were up for it. So I think you got to think of it just a little bit different, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think oftentimes that line of questioning takes a little bit of getting used to. And so I'd really encourage folks to kind of push the client a little bit on that question, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes you'll ask a client like, you know, why do you want to do this? And they'll give you kind of like a very long-winded, like non-goal-oriented sort of answer. And you know, when that happens, I usually say like, okay, like I hear you, right? Like you want good quality and whatever, but like, what is this going to do for the business, right? Like what's the business objective here that you're trying to accomplish? Right. And how will you measure that? Right. Okay. Like you want to increase traffic. Great. Like what's your traffic like right now? Right. What would be, you know, kind of a home run performance here, right? Like let's get actual numbers and start talking about this, right? None of it's a guarantee that like your content's going to produce that, right? But at least you understand clearly what the goal is and you've talked through success criteria. And that means that you can, you know, actually measure something and hold yourself accountable. It also means that next time you're talking to a client, you can look back on that project and cite it and say, you know what, I was working with this organization. We had a similar project and this is what happened. And this was the impact on the organization.
Good. Here's a good question for you, Tim. Shanda said, when it comes to scaling a business to earn six figures, would it be necessary then to outsource tasks? At what point do you start to outsource?
Yeah, so I didn't do any subcontracting or outsourcing of any kind until midway through this year.
Wow.
And I think people often overestimate how early they need to start building a team around themselves. And I'd really encourage you to focus on getting yourself really profitable first. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, if you start adding team members to a business that's not all that profitable, all you're going to do is scale that lack of profitability. And you know, the business situation gets worse and worse and worse, because the likelihood of you being able to afford someone to do something better than you can when you're not profitable is low, right? And so, you know, if you're not earning, you know, at least $150 an hour plus, I wouldn't consider outsourcing anything at all. You know, I think outsourcing a few things to technology, like, you know, scheduling and that kind of stuff, great, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, pay for Calendly, you know, pay for a cheap tool to like automatically handle invoices, that kind of stuff, totally. You know, maybe like pay for an accountant. But in terms of like subcontracting or outsourcing any of the really core things to your business, you know, the work product itself or your marketing and sales effort, I wouldn't outsource any of those until you're like hugely profitable.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think I always tell people, outsource like your life first. Like if you just need more time to do this, outsource things like cleaning your house or getting groceries or whatever to whomever or whatever, if that's an online grocery delivery, whatever that is, to save you a little more time in your week, because that's cheaper than hiring a virtual assistant or someone else to help you in your business. Because ideally, you want to look at your profits every month of like your invoices that you sent out and like want to make sure that it's pretty much all of your profit besides the government. So it is nice to be like, okay, I made this month much this month, and it's kind of what I made this month. So because, you know, people say, oh, I made, you know, six figures this year, but really they only brought home, you know, a quarter of that, you know. So you gotta watch your expenses for sure, especially when starting out, because like you said, you want to be very profitable before you start outsourcing things for no reason. You got to really know too your business and what you want to outsource as well, before you start outsourcing, to maximize your time with your subcontractor too. So Tim, if you had to start over and not get through that mucky first year, what steps would you say for a new writer if they really did want to scale, like from zero to six figures, either in 6 months or a year?
Yeah. I would say, you know, like I would start really by identifying those hubs and identifying the people in your area who already know your ideal clients and building relationships with them. I just think it is such a shortcut. You know, when you compare it to like 20 plus hours a week you might spend, you know, submitting proposals on Upwork or something like that, like you can usually find a client in, you know, 5 or 10 conversations. And the quality of those clients is substantially higher. The best clients, I think, almost always find freelancers through their networks first. And so figuring out a way to kind of get into that network is substantially better than like, you know, finding a client who has been looking for a really long time for someone, and using a freelancing site to do it now. So I would really start there. And I think, you know, focusing on client quality, and your positioning, so that you are matching them, like that really, I think, is the shortcut.
For sure. If you had to give advice on social platforms, what platforms would you say freelancers should be on?
Yeah, I think I have found some level of success with LinkedIn. I found, honestly, like very small, like Slack and Discord groups that are sort of industry specific and local tend to be really, really good. You know, anywhere there's like an actual community, and I think the differentiator there is like not lots of spam, right? If there's lots of people kind of self-promoting, you know, then it's probably not going to be a very good place to find like top quality clients. But if there's people that are actually having conversations, and helping each other out, then it's probably a substantially better space. So for example, like I'm part of a marketing Slack group in Boston. I'm literally the only developer there, best I can tell. So like when someone says, hey, we have, yeah, or like, does anybody know a web developer? I can literally just raise my hand and say, hey, I do that. And, you know, in some cases I've gotten clients from that group in as little as one conversation. And so it's, you know, and I'm the only one competing for that gig. And so, you know, that kind of thing, like you just can't beat that, right? Because your close rate goes way up. You get kind of a chance to set the client's expectation for like how the project should go and how much it should cost and all of those kinds of things in a way that you absolutely couldn't if you're out kind of meeting somebody in like a traditional marketplace, if you will.
Well, and I think too, just you being in Boston, like people are like, oh, he's local. It's pretty cool. And to actually meet your client face to face, that's a whole different level of working as a freelancer. So it is neat to think like, wow, you know, to have something in your major city next to you. I think it's pretty cool too. Like, especially being the only web developer, like who would have thought like in the whole city,
yeah,
you'd be the only one in there.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's one of those things where, like, to be honest, like I do almost no in-person work. And mm-hmm. so like,
yeah.
It's like, I can say I'm from Boston and that for whatever reason carries weight, even though I never actually see them in person.
Right.
And so
right.
it's one of those things but where
you
it's
could,
like,
but you could,
but I could. Yeah. And I think it's like, oh, like, you know, this feeling like you're one of us. So like, I'm going to treat you like one of us,
exactly.
Not like, you know, somebody who I have to like nickel and dime, you know, into oblivion.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, good. This, oh man, this is like really good. I think you just, you brought a lot of different perspectives to a lot of advice that people always hear around the internet, like go on Upwork and pitch, do this and pitch. But really just going back to like human connection is so important. And sometimes it is, you have to get yourself out there to really start to meet people. And that's okay. It is, especially post COVID, we can finally do this. And sometimes you can just go to local events, you can go to regional, whatever's convenient for you and what you can make happen. And like we said in previous conversation today, you just never know who you'll meet and what opportunities that will lead to further down the road. I mean, even your first client that paid you nickels and dimes for your first freelance project later on can come back to you and say, hey, I left that, you know, that person who gave you that job left that company, but I remembered you. And, you know, would you want to start writing for my new company, blah, blah, blah. And you just never know. You never know what people are going to give you opportunities and, but definitely make connections with other people. Tim, where can people find you? I know you mentioned your website, but go ahead and mention it again.
Yeah. So freelancegps.com. I've got a free course. I also do one-on-one coaching if anyone is interested. But I've got a ton of free resources there where you can find me. I'm also on LinkedIn and Twitter. So happy to chat.
Nice.
Yeah. I think, you know, the last thing I would say is really just to approach growing your freelance business in a spirit of experimentation. I see so many freelancers get caught in sort of the rut of like, well, this is how everybody else is doing it. And I think at the end of the day, if you're looking for average results, taking that approach is totally fine, right? But if you want above average results for yourself, whether that's, you know, financial or you know, autonomy or freedom or flexibility or whatever else, you can't be doing the exact same thing that everybody else is doing. And I think owning your marketing and your sales process rather than outsourcing it to a platform or, you know, effectively outsourcing it to conventional wisdom, is hugely important. So, you know, get out there and try stuff, see whether it works, and then try something else.
Yeah. And don't spend forever until you try something else. Like, it's okay to dabble and move on, or dabble, keep dabbling and move on over here and still dabble over there until you see what works for you. And sometimes you'll have success and then all of a sudden you won't in that one way. So it's okay to move on to something else and know that that's still there and to come back if you have to. But like Tim said, there's a lot of different ways to get clients. And, you know, we preach all the different ways because there's not one way. And, you know, you should try what works and find what works for you. Because later on, once you land somebody, that word of mouth is the best one that you can get. And people love to share when they have good experiences, for sure. And bad, but ideally we don't want to use bad. We all know that from working in healthcare. You gave us a lot, Tim. It's really incredible. Thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Well, I'll be respectful of your time. So thank you so much for all of this. And you guys, if there's anything else you guys want me to ask Tim and you think about afterwards, let me know. Be happy to reach out, or you can reach out to him yourself. Appreciate you being here, Tim. One more time, give us a little shout out to your website so people can sign up to your email list and we can always take more from you if we can.
Yeah. It's freelancegps.com. So yeah, excited to be here and looking forward to hopefully chatting with some of you in the future.
Thank you. And come back anytime. We would love to have you back.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's a wrap for today's episode of The Savvy Scribe. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, we'd love for you to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Until next time.
Again, thank you for listening. If you're ready to explore freelance writing as your next PRN job or even full-time, I invite you to check out our Savvy Nurse Writer community on Facebook and visit SavvyNurseWriter.com to help you get started today.